Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wished for something with all your heart, but didn't have the words or the vision to call it into existence? Don't feel like a lone ranger. There are countless souls wandering around aimlessly, looking for their missing pieces in life that will complete their big picture of living an abundant, radiant, and thriving life. Today, each and every person suffers from I.O., information overload. We are bombarded with never-ending words. However, I.O. leaves us asking, now what? Where do I go from here? Where do you go to consciously find your way, to receive the answers you desire, to improve your life, health status, your proper lifestyle, your family's health and welfare, is to the now what, where do I go from here? The Star Waters and Sandy Rogers Show, airing each Thursday from 2 to 3:30 p.m., is where you'll find your answers. Star and Sandy know how confusing it is having this expert or that health professional barking at you with their opinions of what they know you should be eating, which pill for every ill is just right for you, or what you should be thinking about the availability of your time when it comes to providing healthy food for you and your loved ones. When you are constantly convinced that you lack the time to prepare your own food made with ingredients you purposely add and know it is safe and nutritious, you are now being programmed to eat fast, eat processed, because you're too busy. Don't believe the hype. Together, these wellness advocates will provide cutting-edge information, straight no chasers, to educate you and give you the words and vision to ask the question, now what? Where do I go from here?
Hey everybody, greetings and welcome to Now What? Where do I go from here? So you've got two lively moderators bringing you a lot of knowledge in the form of Star Waters, who's also known as the Wellness Wizard, and me, Sandy Rogers, and sometimes they call me the Wellness Gangster. So we have overturned those chronic diseases and reversed things like diabetes and obesity. And so we come with knowledge, and we want to share that with you. So there's a couple of things that we always do before we get started with the show. And the first thing that we do is give thanks to our ancestors. We stand on the shoulders of our ancestors, and we just acknowledge the many gifts and blessings that they've given to us. We know that we get knowledge and fortitude and resilience. And now as we learn better and know better, we can do better because we're following their golden wisdom to health and wellness. So to our ancestors, we give thanks, we give thanks, we give thanks. Ashe. So thank you for joining with us today, and we invite you to be an active part of the conversation. And by calling us at 516-531-9819, and you will simply hit 1 on your dial to let us know you want to speak live on air. And we do ask, though, that once your line is open, if you're not speaking, if you would just mute your phone, because the microphones are extremely sensitive to outside noise, and we want you to be able to hear this entire broadcast, which is just going to knock your socks off. So I'm going to turn it over to my sister Star for a moment.
Star, I'm lucky to make it in there and tapped my colleague on the shoulder.
Excuse me, I have all these technological issues going on. I have people speaking to me from all
over. I'm like, what's that? That's new.
I'm like, what the heck? So, okay, thank you for bearing with me today, audience. I have a wonderful, inspirational piece today that I feel just encapsulizes our guest. So let me get straight to it. The wounded healer. Consider the following situation. A person born with a cleft palate becomes a surgeon specializing in the repair of cleft palates. A stutterer who corrects his problem becomes a speech therapist. A recovering alcoholic now works as a drug rehabilitation counselor. These individuals are living the story of the wounded healer, a person who uses the understanding gained in his own healing to assist others in the same problem. A modern example of the wounded healer can be seen in the life of Bill W., the co-founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, AA, faced with an illness over which he had, in which he was powerless, Bill W. joined forces with Dr. Bob Smith to create a society of fellow sufferers. Since the inception in 1935, AA has become a source of healing and inspiration to millions of alcoholics around the world. The immensity of Bill W.'s suffering was redeemed by his infinite good that it accomplished. Because we all suffer spiritual, emotional, mental, or physical wounds, each of us has the capacity to be a wounded healer. Think back to times that you have been more effective in healing others. You will no doubt find that the wounds you helped to heal were the very same ones that you once overcame in yourself. Thus, if you are dealing with a wound in your life right now, realize that one day your hurt will be a healing balm for another wounded soul. For this, give thanks. Yes. And I have a few affirmations that will back this up. I know that the wounds in my life have purpose and meaning. Using the understanding and compassion gained from my own recovery, I reach out to others in the same situation. I give thanks for the ability to be of service in this way. My hurt can be a healing balm for the suffering of others. And lastly, I have discovered a hidden blessing in my situation. Ashe.
Ashe. Thank you, Star. Very well read. I appreciate that. So I get the opportunity to introduce our guest for today, and you'll understand my enthusiasm very shortly. The name of our session for today, our show for today, is called Hooked on Health. And our superstar guest is Mr. Warren Armstead. I was always told to look for someone who has been through some things in life to learn from. So today we bring to the stage a man who has done just that, Mr. Warren Armstead. I call him my cousin because we share the same last name. From the first moment of seeing his posts on Facebook, I was impressed. Daily, he delivers the same message with different words, yet all of his messages conveyed this: exercise, pray to God, eat right, drink water, and you will reverse disease. Warren has been actively involved with exercising his body for most of his life. He attributes his ability to heal quickly after two extreme car accidents in 9 months to having built up his immune system, having a strong physique, and always giving thanks to God. His background is colorful, and so is his desire to help others. His whole life changed when his older brother was shot down by a police officer back in 1968. He proudly asserts he has no shame and no regrets. He has a special message for all of us to hear and get. He's powerful, he's magnetic, and he happens to be my cousin. Welcome to the show, Warren.
Oh, thank you, Sandy. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate the invite. You know that I've never done this before, so I'm going to enjoy it, I know. You know, and it, an
yes,
hour and a half seems like a long time, but once I get rolling, it is going to seem a little short. And nice meeting you as well, Star. I want to thank the both of you. You know, I really enjoyed your opening. Anyhow, my name's Warren Armstead. I'm from Seattle, Washington, but now I reside on Whidbey Island. Coopville's the city. I was born in 1955. We have nine kids that was in the family. Seven boys and two girls. And there was five older than I, three younger, right? So anyhow, it was a challenge growing up. A single mom, she ended up marrying a man. So anyhow, he was my stepdad, somebody that I really didn't care for back in the day because I faulted him for some things. But before all that, I was a pretty average kid with great attributes. As far as athleticism, I was extremely good. I was a good artist. I can write good. I drew. My mom used to have me write all the thank you letters because she had businesses. She had a catering service. She ended up starting a janitorial service. You know, my mom was pretty ambitious herself. She was a good person. Hardly ever see her or hear her curse. And what she did, it was like she felt so guilty about it, right? She always instilled in us to be considerate, be concerned, and care for others, you know. And all you have is your word in this life, you know. And so that's what I live by, regardless of what happened in my life. But anyhow, I was back in the early, middle 60s, I should say, we ended up moving from the central part of town, which is called a central district where a majority of the black people live. But it was at the lower part where it was closer to the University of Washington. And we ended up moving out to Beacon Hill, where it was predominantly Asians and whites. And so once we moved out there, it was a little different, right? And so I ended up going to all-white school, Asian and white school, me and my little brother. And so we got along pretty well. You know, I was an extremely good athlete, so I was well-liked in school, and I was a good artist. You know, I was able to draw. I think I was probably number two in our class in drawing. Anyhow, I enjoyed going to school. It was fun, you know, and it was different from the school that I went to before. I went to that school, you know, so I got a chance to really be introduced to other cultures. You know, I used to go over my little Asian friend's house and try out their different meals and stuff, and I really actually got hooked on that food, right? And I think from then I started eating certain kind of foods. You know that? Even though my mom cooked a lot of soul food, I started to become really attracted to Asian food because for some reason it was different, and in the back of my mind, I believe it was healthy, you know? So anyhow, let me get on past all that. That was fun. I was an extremely good little kid, right? Athletic, it was just off the chain. I took that little school where all these white Asian kids to a black school, and we played football, and we 19-2, and they just lift me up because it seemed like I'd almost did everything but throw the ball to me, right? You know, so anyhow, after all that, me and my little brother, we was down at Rainier Beach, and this was the time of my life where it changed. You know, little did I know that it was going to change, but me and my little brother was out. It was dark. It was about 7 o'clock at night. We walked through the back door. Now, I'm 12 years old. He's 11 years old, right? And so we was kind of – we were just out and about. We kind of did our own thing, right, because for some – whatever reason, my mom was a single mom, and I have a stepdad that he wasn't really a dad to me or anything. But then we come walking in the back door of our house. We had a two-level house with five bedrooms in it. And we walked in the back door, and I had a couple friends there, and my older brother was there, right? I walked in the back door, and there was this look in my, especially my friend's eyes. I had a friend, he lived down the street. He was a couple years older than I. He looked at me and said, "Ooh," and he put his hands over his mouth. And he said, "Man," and then he just blurted it out. He said, "Your brother's dead," right? And I said, "What?" I looked at him, and I didn't really know how to react, right? He said, "Ooh, he got shot. He got shot by the police." And there was a lot of people upstairs in some – the feeling changed then.
Yeah.
So what happened is that I said, "Wow." So I went upstairs, and sure enough, there was a police officer stayed across the street from us. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to feel, right? But this was my older brother. He was the oldest of the Armstead. There's two olders. The oldest, they're Hoverts. And then there's five of us. Well, actually, there's seven of us as Armsteads, but the two bottom ones later on found out that they really wasn't an Armstead. But anyhow, there was one, the oldest of the Armsteads, him and I was a lot alike. He was a musician. People loved him. He was nice, generous. He loved driving. One thing about him, he loved, and he was athletic like me. He used to always bring me along with him whenever he went to play sports. For some reason, me, and I had another brother in between us. But anyhow, he used to always come get me because he'd come in really late at night. He was in a band. He was a really good bass player, right? And he knew how to play all the instruments, really. So he tried to teach me how to play guitar. So I was bought a guitar when I was young, and he had me on the drums. He was an artist as well. Me and him was a lot alike. He used to always wake me up wherever I was in the house. When he'd come in late at night, he'd wake me up, and I have to go to school, of course, but he's telling me all the things he did, which weren't all good things. Some of those things were he was out doing negative things, right?
Yeah.
And so anyhow, what happened then, the day I came in the house, it was all that changed. From that point, my life had changed. He was dead. I didn't feel it. I didn't cry. Everybody was crying. I didn't cry. We went to the funeral, all this hollering and crying and falling down and hugging the casket and all that stuff. I'm like, wow, you know, and I didn't know what to feel. But little did I know that it affected me for the rest of my life. From that point on, it seemed like my whole life changed, right? I had an attitude. This attitude was, I was learning a little bit about the history of how white people treated black people and how the police targeted us and was doing people, and the Black Panthers was a good organization for us, which the Seattle, Washington Panthers, they did a lot of good things. And what happened, how all this happened with my brother is I blame my stepdad because he ran my brother out of the house. And I'm not sure, but it seemed like a week later, my older brother got killed, mm-hmm. right, because he didn't come home.
Wow.
And so I faulted him for that. But my life changed immediately. I used to like to dance. My mom used to take me to dance. Every time they had a party, my mom would come grab me. Come go with me, you know, dance for the old people. So that's, you know, because I was a good dancer. And then, you know what, I could dance. I'm serious. I was so creative on the dance floor, right? And so what happened was I started, everybody, all of my friends would say, what you going to do? What you going to do? And it was sort of like they would want me to lead something or do something. I don't know what I'm supposed to do at 12 years old, right? But they would ask me this question. And so what happened is we just started smoking weed and smoking cigarettes, and we was challenging each other. And so we start taking speed. And all in this little bit of time, right, we started school. We go to school. We was on high off weed and mushrooms and mescaline and stuff, right? And I got expelled from school because there was a riot that broke out in Rainier Beach School, and it was predominantly all white school, and it might have been about just over 1,200 people in the school, and the 7th and 8th graders were going with the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, right? So I'm mixed in with all of these older people, and the white people were down there. It was a lot of racial tension, so, hey, something broke out in the lunchroom, cafeteria, and I jumped up on the table. I grabbed some stools and I started swinging stools, right? And little did I know, I hit the gym teacher in the head with one of the stools, right? Because I was
wow.
You know, I was defending myself, right? And so anyhow, I got expelled, so wasn't able to go back to that school. I ended up going to another school, cross town, all the way over to Meany School. That's where I actually was raised, over by that school, right? So I started going there. There was so much wrong going on at that school, right? But I kind of enjoyed it. I kind of enjoyed it. But there was a lot of crime going on. People showing that they had a lot of money and they were doing a lot of burglaries and stuff. And I was like, wow, right? And I wasn't aware of that kind of thing, right? But they showed me and showed me how to make quick money. And so I brought that back to my neighborhood. My neighborhood was Beacon Hill. We were the Beacon Hill gang, right? So our Beacon Hill gang, we were good dancers, sharp dressers, and our one friend, his parents was kind of wealthy, and so he always had a really nice car. We was in a really nice car. They had three nice cars. They had a Cadillac, a Camaro, and a Delta 88. So we was in different cars five days out of the week. And so I was bringing that back to our neighbors. Next thing you know it, our gang and my nephew and them, they started committing crimes. And so I decided to go. One day on the way to school, I was really sharp. I was in lime green and purple with a purple hat. I was sharp, right? And so we was going. I'm in the seventh grade. We're going down this street, and so they decided they want to break in the house, right?
Oh, wow.
And, you know, it was crazy. That was a crazy – once I think about that scene, that was so crazy because the one guy, he was always the real bad one out of the crew. He started tearing everything up in the house. I'm like, wow. And so we all got out of there, right? So anyhow, some people seen us coming from out of the backyard of the house. And, of course, they seen that loud purple and that yellow and lime green outfit that we had on, right? And so they reported that to police. We made it. We all get on the bus. And everybody got off the bus because they were going to another school to hang out. And I was going all over to my school. So they got off. And then so I decided at the last minute when they were already off the bus to get off. And the police was following the guy with the purple hat, right?
Wow.
And that was me. I got off the bus, and sure enough, they arrested me. And that was my first encounter with the law. And I went to juvenile, and the one friend of mine, he was just telling everything, right? And I was like, wow, I was tripping off this guy. He's telling on people that never even committed a crime, everybody that hang out with at the school, right? So anyhow, that happened. We got out of that. Next thing you know it, this was a way of life for a while. You know that? And my mentality was, let me not stay within the community, you know, committing crimes within the community. I was angry at law enforcement, and I believed that white people was part of that. And so my whole thing was steal from the rich, steal from the rich. And that's what I did. I made it a point, anytime that it come to the minorities, I would not steal from them. You know, that I would always, so I, anyhow, I was end up doing burglaries, stealing a lot of jewelry. I got into jewelry. I learned about jewelry real tough, and so I was able to get the top dollar for it. I have the whole downtown Seattle, anybody that was wanting to make money, all those jewelry stores, those coin shops, those stamp collecting places, I met all of them, and they were so crooked, and this is how I knew that these people was crooked, because they was taking this stuff, they were buying this stuff, right, instead of reporting it to the police, right? And so that's how, you know, it went when I was a little youngster. You know, I was always sharp every single day, and I had a mouthpiece. My mouthpiece was, like, incredible. People just loved to hear me talk, right? And I was able to sell anything and talk you out of anything if you gave me a chance. And that's what I did. I had the whole Seattle, downtown Seattle. If they was the crooked, all those businesses, if they was crooked, they knew who I was, right? And to this one little guy, I let him know my business. Why'd I do that? But you know what? That will haunt you. When you let people know your business and you're doing things wrong, and you say it's all about the game, I was so caught up in the game. The game was you just get out and you never tell. You don't tell your business. You don't tell the police. You roll, right? And that was a terrible way to think, right? But anyhow, this guy told. He gave up all of my connections downtown Seattle, right?
Oh,
and,
wow.
And so that was devastating. So no one would deal with me after that, right? And I had a pretty good connection, right? And I end up later on, what happened, I was introduced to heroin at 15 years old.
Jeez.
And wow. You know, the first time I even heard it. Now, I used to go to those rock festivals, take acid, hang out with the hippies. Me and the hippies were cool. I used to go to the University of Washington when they had the AV open, you know, back in the 60s, right? I used to go, late 60s and early 70s, I used to go down there and hang out, and we used to smoke. Me and my little friend, I had a good little friend. Me and him was partners. This is the only friend I had in my life that I really liked, right? And he got taken from me at 15, right? So I had an older brother that I lost that I didn't feel the pain. And then I had my best friend at 15. He got taken from me. But how that happened was I had my stepdad. He wanted me out of the way, okay? Because I was assertive, I was aggressive, and I didn't want to. He wasn't going to be able to whoop me, and I didn't do what he wanted me to do. And so he figured out a way to call the police on me, saying that I had something in the house that was stolen.
Oh wow!
And sure enough, they came to our house. I see that was a wrong move on his part, but he didn't care. He just wanted me out of the way. Hmm. And I was 15. This happened when I was 15. So anyhow, they came there. They found the stuff. It was one day we was walking down the street late at night, and the door was open. It was a record company, and the door was open. It's late at night. And so we just went in there, and all these records, right? It was back in the day. All these records was free. So we loaded up this car, and we took them home, took all the records home. Not all of them, a lot of them. And so that's what he got me for. So actually, they didn't get me for that. They got me for incorrigible. They can't send me away to juvenile detention, right? And so I'm at this juvenile detention. So here I am. I'm a really good athlete. I can play pool, ping pong, all that stuff. I win trophies, right? That's how good. I was a really good athlete. Eye-hand coordination was off the charts. And so I really wanted to get out of there. And this is way up in the woods, up there by Vancouver, where Star lives, or used to live. And
I'm on the other end. I'm south. I'm south near Portland. You know, Vancouver,
right,
USA.
Right. Yes, that's right. Vancouver, USA. That's where I was at. Fort Swart. I was at Nassau, Washington. I don't know if that's by Astoria, Oregon. Anyhow,
oh,
up that way.
Yeah, going down.
Yeah, it's up.
Okay,
it's
cool.
Up. It's up that way. Anyhow, I end up. It was all woods, so I end up. I had money in my pocket when I was a young, and so I decided I wanted to go home earlier than when they let me go, and so that's what I did. I took three white guys, and we went and slept in the woods that night. They were looking all over for us, and we was right in the back of the institution. And so we made it, but see, I wasn't supposed to hide because there was no black people around and nowhere near the area. And so I got tired because we was on the ocean, and I got two Charlie horses in the back of my leg. And when I got the Charlie horses, I was falling to the ground, and there was a snake moving right in front of my path, right? And there's a big gardener snake, but I was scared of snakes. So I jumped up. Didn't seem like the Charlie horses were not even there. I jumped up, and so we kept moving. And then we was climbing down the side of the ocean, and I caught two more Charlie horses hanging off of this big old tree. And so I said, no, I can't make this. I can't do it. So I pulled myself back up. So we went to the highway, and they couldn't get a ride. So I ran out there with the money I had in my hand, and sure enough, this car pulled over to the side, picked us up, and took us into Tacoma. And we got out there, and I took one. We split it, except for I took one of the white guys with me to my niece's house over in the Holly Park district. Right, Holly Park was a lower income neighborhood. It was like the project. Anyhow, we went down there, and I was back on the streets again. That's when that song came out. Back on the streets again, and that's where I was at. I was on the streets, right? We started getting high,
at this point?
I was 15 years old.
15, or are you older?
Yeah. I was 15. At this time, I was 15, right?
Okay.
When I escaped from that juvenile, I was 15, right? And then when I was this whole time, I'm 15, right? And so I took off, and then my friend, my best friend, the one I was telling you about, he was with me. I wanted to leave because I was now on a hot list. They were looking for me, right? And so my nephew, one of my other friends, went to California. And me and my little partner, we ended up catching the bus down there shortly after that. So we were down there. One of my friends got sick. My partner, his parents, he was a single son. He's a single child. And so he ended up going back. So I ended up staying in California by myself, right? That was a trip. Anyhow, I was in California, and so I didn't have nowhere to stay, really. I have relatives down there. One of my relatives, I had a lot of jewelry, too, right? Because I had broken the house, I had some really nice jewelry, right? And so I was over one cousin's house, and I was in the bed, and I woke up, he had his hands on my thing, my private, right? And I said, whoa, you know? I immediately got out of there, you know, and went over to my aunt's house, and I stayed there one night, and they, since I didn't want to sell them or give them my jewelry, they said I had to leave because it was a lot of stress and pressure on her husband, right? So anyhow, I left there, so I'm on the streets. I fall asleep at the bus station. I'm getting ready to put my belongings on the bus and send that to Seattle. Have somebody in Seattle pick it up. But anyhow, I got on the highway. And this is why white hippies are really cool. I was hitchhiking. I was in San Francisco, and I'm hitchhiking back to Seattle right now. I'm 15 years old, hitchhiking, right? This is nighttime, right? But anyhow, these hippies picked me up, right? And so they got marijuana, and so I'm cool. And they buy me some Burger Master, so I'm eating. They said, look at here, we're getting ready to take this exit, and we're in Redding, California. And they said, you can come out to our house if you want. And I said, I don't know what I was thinking about. It's nighttime, right, on the freeway. As soon as I get out of their car, and I'm in that little area, it said prohibit, hitchhiking is prohibit. Here come a car pulling over, and it was the State Patrol.
Oh,
and,
wow.
I lied to them. I lied to them. Of course, I said I was 18. They took me to jail. I seen jail as soon as I walked in there. All these old people and all these, oh, my God, it was terrible. I said, oh, no, let me be honest with you. I'm only 15 years old. I just came clean. I told them I'm on the run from a juvenile. Yeah, and so anyhow, they took me to juvenile. Yeah, next thing you know it, they're picking me up. They said put me on a flight going back. No one was on the flight with me, and so I could have took off, right? But then as soon as I landed, so we landed in, in Portland. We landed in Portland. I had, there was a guy, tall count. He was my rivalry in ping pong, right, because he was pretty good too. Anyhow, they picked me up, took me back. I was in the hole, and then I get a clipping that my friend. Now, let me tell you this. This is real interesting and real scary. My best friend, mom, went to Canada, and she had a reading about her son, right, that he was going to go to California, come back, and die in a car accident at 17 years old, right? And that's what he did, but it was at 15 years old. Because he went to California with me, came back, got in a car accident. The only one in the car that died was him. So I get this little article in a letter from his cousin, which was a friend of mine, how it all happened. Anyhow, it was devastating. I lost my best friend, right? So I finally get out 6 months, and I'm all right. What do I do? I don't know. I go to school, I guess. For a little while. Did I do good in school? No, I didn't do good in school because I never learned anything. I still had all of this pain that I had buried, right? I was supposed to live this life or support my brothers and sisters because my older brother was no longer there, and it was like I was just like him. So here I was placed in the position to take his place, and going to school wasn't it. Because that made no money. And I believe that we needed money in order for it. But anyhow, and I also needed it because I like dressing sharp and I like having money and I was getting high then, right? So I had to do that. And so when I got out, I got introduced to heroin, which was the ultimate drug, right? It just did a whole lot. It gave me that false sense of security, you know, where sex was concerned, everything. I mean, that was the ultimate drug, right? It gave me the courage. It gave me something that I was lacking, you know, because I was growing up so fast and I was associating. All my friends were now older than me, 2-3 years older than I. And so that's what, so one thing led to another. At 15, after I got out of the institution, I started selling drugs. Once I used it, I said, oh, wow. So I had to figure out how to make money, right? And this was my whole thing, being around money. And so I'm using drugs, and I start selling drugs, right? So when I was selling drugs, what happened was my friends, we all were using, and so they started getting credit from me. They owed me money, so they decided they wanted to pay me my money. And they said, well, let's go hit this jewelry store. Let's go around. And I thought they were playing. I said, no, I don't want to go do that stuff, right? You guys owe me money. I don't need to go do that, right? And so anyhow, I seen how serious they was, and I just wanted to be a part of the big haul, right? So I end up going with them, and sure enough, we hit this jewelry store, and it turned out to be crazy. The one little guy, and this is the same guy that he got caught, and he told where all of my connections were downtown. Now he tells all the who was all involved with this robbery. Now he never should have got caught. But he's just, oh, my God. I wonder if he was just really a plant the whole time. So anyhow, at this point, I had three different girlfriends, but the one I really care for was this little Asian. She's a Japanese girl. She was, you know, she was my heart. But then the lady that I knew that I was buying my drug from was an older Korean and native lady. She is about 12 years older than I. I was 17 at this time, and of course, she liked my style. I was young, I was built nicely, and I was a good hustler, right? And so that's when I started messing with her, so I had to cut the young girl loose because I knew at this point I was in trouble. I had just caught an armed robbery based on a jewelry store. And anyhow, what happened, I ended up paying this attorney all this money, and he didn't do his job. But anyhow, I made a deal. My best, my best friend at this point, he went to trial because he was identified in the robbery. And but the way the owners expressed their remembrance of him was racist, right? And so that's how he beat the case. And so chances of me beating it was great. You know that? But you know what? My attorney talked me into taking a plea bargain with the promise that I would only get probation. And so I did that, and so the judge didn't honor it. So they gave me 20 years, right?
Oh, wow.
And I'm like,
everybody else got
like,
off but you?
No, no, no. My one friend went to trial. He beat it. My other, my relative, he had another case, so he ended up pleading guilty to one of them instead of both of them. So he went to prison. The other guy went to prison, but he ended up testifying against the guy. He also testified against the guy that went to trial. He ended up getting time. Everybody got time. My little brother, he went to juvenile because he was under 18, right? So everybody except for the one guy that the store owners identified, and he was the only one that they identified. He's the only one that got off. You know, everybody else went to prison. Anyhow,
wow.
I stayed in prison. I ended up going to prison at 18
so
years
Warren,
old. But I was
so
what?
Warren. I'm going to jump in here.
Okay.
So where did this all start turning around for you? You know what
I'm
was
a tell
the
Okay. What were the things start turning around for me? Oh, I went through that. Okay, I was in and out prison for a while. I'm going to tell you, when I was 21 years old, everything's a part of an education for me. Okay, it didn't turn around right away, but I started realizing the pain and the suffering I endured from my brother's death and my friend's death. At 23
right.
years old, I had did so much stuff that King County, they was after me because the only people that were being affected by my criminal activity was rich. They were the rich people. You know, they have a lot of Jews. And so I ended up, this would happen. In 1978, I went to commit a pharmacy burglary and got caught. This is how it happened, though. This is important. Because this is when I started realizing, I didn't realize it then, but my life was spared. I come out, the police that came, it was late at night, and I ran out of there, and there was two of us, and I got shoved one way, another person went the other way, and I went down in like a trench. And I kept moving, and the police shot at me four times from about 6 to 8 feet, right? They shot at me four times, and in order for them to stop shooting, I said, I'm hit. And they stopped shooting, right? But I wasn't hit. I ended up going to a drug program. I'm going to make this kind of quick. I ended up going to a drug program. This drug program, actually Washington State was trying to get a life sentence, a habitual criminal act out of me, right? And the Snohomish County was a different county, and they was feuding at the time. And there was a counselor there that was that was in a relationship with the judge that I got sentenced through, right? And then I was on parole, and the parole member, they knew somebody that I knew, and so everything went well for me. So I ended up going to a drug program, which was the inpatient drug program, which was it was intense. It was heavy. It was educational, though. Are you talking about somebody learning a lot about emotions, about behavior? Oh my goodness, I became really good, and they wanted me to come work for the house, but I didn't. I made the decision to go to college, so I ended up going to college. I went to Bellevue Community College for recreation director, but I ended up going 2 years. I ended up getting in a relationship. Relationships can be a distraction, you know that. But not only that, I was started associating with old people from that drug program that also graduated, right? And one thing led to another. I got back into using drugs then. I end up getting in trouble again, going away for a short period of time. I never did a long period of time, so it was always a short period of time. It was like this was a message for me that you're getting sent away long enough to clean up and think. And so, but each time I would think and I would get smarter and I'd get smarter, but I come up with different schemes, right? And so I got out. Then what happened with the probation, parole, I kept on seeing it. I seen the parole board three times, and they didn't know how to deal with me because I had so much support, right? And I was this not, you know, an all right, light-skinned, freckle-faced black guy that would know how to talk, right, and always had a lot of people writing letters and coming to talk on my behalf, you know, and they kept on giving me a break. And so the head board member came up and said, I'm tired of my board members not wanting to come see you because they don't know how to treat you. She said, no, I'm giving you the rest of your time. So I had that 20-year max. So she gave me the rest of my time, right?
Oh, wow.
And so I was in prison for again. So I ended up getting out then. Of course, I end up getting in a relationship, which was a beautiful relationship, with a beautiful woman. She's a model. And, I end up working. Let me tell you this. I worked for the Seattle Recreation Department for 6 years. I forgot that part. That was important. I also, when I got out the last time, I ended up meeting this model. She was pretty famous. I didn't know that some young kids I worked with the county parks, was talking about who's the best-looking females in Seattle. And her name came up, and I didn't know this, but I ended up being where they said, that's one of the girls we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. And so we were together for almost 10 years. We had a child, right? I was into selling drugs. This is when I made moves. I would start selling drugs. I met these people, and they start trying to give me all of these pounds of cocaine, right? And I said, oh, no, I was scared of that stuff, right? But I started selling it, right? And anyhow, they went to prison. They ended up doing 37 years. Good thing that I was in the beginning. It was in the beginning of the relationship and two relationships. It was when I met her and when I met them. They were like Colombians and Cubans. I went up in this hotel room with her, and she was young. She was 12 years younger than me. And all of this money and all this cocaine, all this stuff. I said, whoa, I backed up out of there. You know, I didn't want to be a part of that. It was just too large for me. But anyhow, so we end up having a kid. This is very important. We end up having, time is flying, isn't it? But anyhow, we end up having a kid.
We told you.
And the kid had ended up with brain damage. Right? Oh, my goodness.
Was that because of the drugs?
Yeah, it could have been. Okay. Now, it could have been. My sister was there. I wasn't. I was back in jail. You understand what I'm saying? For a violation. And so my sister was there at the time of birth. And she said, well, what happened was the bag broke, and they seen black stool coming out of her, and they ignored it because they said she was dilating, and that was an intern. And then what they should have did, it was later said that they should have went in there and gave her a C-section and took that baby out of there. But the thing about it is he went into intensive care, right, because his brain wasn't getting oxygen. So he had brain damage. But that could have stopped because he was developing, but he was having 70, 80 seizures a day, right?
Wow.
And so they didn't find out about what kind of medication to give him to after he was 3 years old, right? And so he started regressing, right? And so... Anyhow, that was another devastating thing. Then after that, okay, now here's what's important. This is why I know God was in my life. God was working in my life. It's when I got shot at from 6 to 8 feet away 4 times and I didn't get a hit, right? And then at that point, after I found out about my son not going to be normal, I OD'd, right? I shot too much heroin and cocaine together, and I actually died. Because people always say, your life flashed before you, and that's what happened. I said, I clearly remember this like it was yesterday. I said, oh, this is what it's like. I see myself playing in the school with how much fun I was having, how great a time in elementary school all the way up to the sixth grade, right? And it was just flashing before my mind. And I said, oh, this is what it feels like to be dying. And there was a voice and a bright light came on and says, yes, but I'm not finished with you, right?
Mm.
So I went into a seizure. I went into a seizure. So I was all right. I ended up coming around. So that was very important because now that wasn't enough. I still end up using drugs. And drugs is extremely powerful, right? You see how powerful drugs. So I end up. Meeting I'm always making enough money to take care of all my addictions. I have many addictions. I had addictions of drugs. I have addictions to make sure I have a nice woman around me. I had addiction to taking care of family members. I had addiction to dressing really nice and driving nice cars. All these things that was my props. All these things were me, you know that? But not really. These things were my props, and these are the way that I lived, and people were able to see that. They didn't know all of the pain and the suffering that I was going through, right? And people praised me. They said, God, man, no, nothing holds you back because I can get out of prison or jail. And next thing you know, I'm driving nice cars and having everything that like I never left, right? Anyhow, I end up meeting another lady, an Asian Filipino, and we went to work. We got into bank frauding, and I was making so much money, and then people start coming. I was making so much money, you know, that it was just ridiculous how much money. Yes, I mean, you're talking about $40,000 a day some days, right? And I'm like, wow, you know, just throwing some people start wanting to hang out with me. So I always had a plan. But I always took care of people, too. And so this was the good side of me, always taking care of people regardless of what I did. Here's another thing that I always did. Regardless of all of the crimes and things that I did, I was always exercising. It didn't matter. I'd load the car up. I'd get a couple females and a guy in my car, and we'd be rolling. I'd say, I see a schoolyard, and I see pull-up bars and all that kind of stuff. I'd say, wait. I'd go work out for 15 to 20 minutes doing pull-ups and push-ups and stuff. And at nighttime, I'm running. I'm running 2, 3 o'clock in the morning, right? And my mentality was this, to never get sick, to not allow myself to get so dependent on drugs and where it would be hard to kick it, right? And not only that, I was always concerned and worried about being obese. Now, obese, I feared that. I feared being in bad shape after looking. And as later on, my mom had diabetes, and I was like, wow, you know that? And she was dying. And this is one of the reasons that I've come to advocate health. Let me put this to you, because time is flying. Look at this time. It's 11:52. Okay. Now, this is very, very important. My mom and her condition. I have a younger brother that lost my mom's place. My mom was so independent. She didn't want her kids taking care of her. And so she ended up moving in with me, right? And here, my mom said, I didn't raise you to raise me. You know that? And I tried to take her in there to give her a shower. She just fought me, and I couldn't get her to take a shower. So I had my girlfriend, which is a Filipino girl. She ended up giving my mom. But my mom, what happened? Well, my mom stopped taking her medication. She had pus and stuff oozing out of her legs, right? And then once the police came. Now, this was embarrassing. My brother or somebody came to me while I was in my bedroom, right, and I was getting so high, and I had this white robe on,
this
right?
This was with
now,
your mom was there, you were getting high?
Yes. Yes, this is how bad drugs is, I'm trying to tell you. And so something was wrong with my mom. So I threw on a robe, and this robe wasn't my robe. It was my girl's robe, and she had all of this blood on this robe, right? But I go out there. Here's the medics. I know they're looking at me like I'm crazy because I got blood on the robe and my mom's going to the hospital, right? And the thing about it is I didn't realize I had blood on the robe until after they were gone. I said, God, they must have think I was really getting high, which I was, right? And this is how serious drugs is. the girl, and I was having so much money that I almost felt guilty for my girl. She ended up getting her arm amputated because she kept shooting dope in the same arm, and her bone got so soft because the needle was puncturing her. You know, this is some serious stuff here. You know that? And so she had to go get her arm amputated, right? And I was feeling so guilty about that. You know that? It's because it was my know-how, my tenacity, whatever you want to call it, to go and get money, because I wouldn't get little money. I would go get big money because I had too many addictions, and there was too many people dependent on me, right? I had family. I had so many things. So many people was dependent on me. So anyhow, I was on probation. What happened? And there was so much to these stories, but I'm going to tell you, I was in the bank fraud for a long period of time, making a lot of money. And so my probation officer, I was on probation for doing something real stupid. You know, I was in Nordstrom's and I put on a pair of glasses. I was high off some drugs and clonopins. They don't go good together. And I forgot that I had the glasses on my face and they arrested me. And then they found some dope in my pocket. And so I was in jail. So they put me on probation for a year. And so I had to report. So my probation officer, he said, man, so I would have to go give a UA. I give a UA. He said, man, did you just get high out in the waiting room? I said, no. He said, man, you got to do something because I'm giving him dirty UAs every day. He said, I told him this. This is when my life started to kind of change. I told him, give me 30 days and I'll be clean, because I had a lot going on. I had just bought a condo, I bought a house, and I had all this stuff, right? And he says, okay. He made a deal with me, and he could have violated me. And so 30 days I was clean, and I stayed clean. But then the fraud didn't stop. You know, the big money didn't stop. But anyhow, so they finally came down.
What about your mom? How was your mom's health at this point?
My mom, I'm sorry, I should have went back to that. My mom died. She died about a month after she's in the hospital, about maybe not even a month after they took her from my house. You know that?
Oh, wow.
And which was a really sad situation. But I'm going to tell you something. And on the day of her funeral, I was getting high all the way up to the last minute, and I went to jump in the car to get to the front. These are signals. These are signs. I went to get in the car, and the car wouldn't start. And so I'm so frustrated, right, that I'm going to miss my mom's funeral, right? And so what happened, the car ended up starting at the last minute, but I was late. I was running up the hill, and I barely made it to her casket before I just broke down, and all of that emotion came out, right? And I was
That's saying, all the way from your brother's death, right? From 68, and
yes,
all this stuff
yes,
you have been
yes,
carrying around with you, your friend's death.
Yeah,
and
yeah, and this is in 98, right?
30
so,
years later.
Yeah, and so here I am. So I end up going to prison. What happened? I end up going to prison. Let me tell you, because this is where it all changes. I was indicted by the federal government. It was Warren Armstead, the United States versus Warren Armstead and others, right? There was eight other people involved with this big conspiracy. It was a bank conspiracy to commit bank fraud and bank fraud, right? And you can go Google my name and you'll see all the things that I was involved with. But anyhow, I fought and I fought. I went to trial. Who goes to trial against the government, right? You have people getting on the stand that were with you that were telling your story, right? And I just didn't believe. You know, I always believed that this is the second time in a short period of time I went to two trials. I went to three trials before that. I won every one of them. But the last two was in 2003 and 2006. I lost both of them, right? And I always, you know, and I paid a lot of money, right, on the first one, right? Anyhow, I went to jail. They gave me 17 and a half years. I couldn't believe how much time they gave me for bank fraud. You know that? I mean, wow. And so I didn't even cry. But so I appealed it. I gave them 5 years back. They took off 5 years. And so when I came back to be resentenced to 13 years or something, 14 years, I cried. That morning that I was getting ready to go get sentenced, I was in the cell by myself, and this doesn't happen. for some reason, I was in that cell by myself. And this is a big cell. And I, every morning for the whole time, all them years I was locked up until it was about 5-6 years later that I was fighting my case, I was sitting in a meditative position. Then I start praying. And I start praying to God. I start asking God for help. I had to forgive myself for all the things. All of the my mentality was to get these people to God understand and testify against me how wrong they were. But here was the deal. I had to forgive myself for putting myself in the position. So I just start, my emotions was uncontrollable. I was so deep into my feelings that everything that I experienced hurt-wise was coming out. And I was loud. Now, this is 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, mind me. Right? And this, I'm in jail where it's quiet. So everybody can hear this noise, right? They didn't know what to think of it. But it was me answering to all of this pain, all of this suffering. And God shined that light. It was like I was a little child sitting on a bench in the middle of a big arena, right? Getting right with God. So when I say pray to God for strength, I had to empty that out in order to open the room up for God. And so that's what I did. So while I'm in prison, this is important too. While I'm in prison, yeah, the whole time, you know what I'm doing? You got to know. I'm exercising. Every chance I got, I was exercising. You know, when they put me in a position, I had a job. I had one job, and in 30 days, they put me in, something happened, they put me in a cell with a Mexican boy in California. And, you know, I'm just a good dude, so I don't believe somebody's going to put their hands on me for no reason, right? They put this Mexican guy in my cell, and he warned them, and they wouldn't move him out of my cell, so he starts socking me, right, in the back of my head, right? And I turned around, and I beat him down real quick, because I was pretty, I think they wanted to see how good I was with my hands, right? And I got him down. I had him in a chokehold, right? And so anyhow, I filed a lawsuit. I ended up winning the lawsuit against them for putting me in the position, right? And so that's when I learned some things about the law and how to attack lawsuits. But anyhow, so I was in this group. It was a business ventures with some guys, and I didn't like them. Oh, I didn't like them. They were terrible guys, right? You know, they weren't the kind of people I would associate myself with, you know, because I believe in goodness. I believe in kindness. I believe in consideration. I believe in all the things that represent good, God, right? And I almost told them what I was going to do, but this one black kid who was really smart was in the group. He kept asking me, what was I going to do when I get out at 60 years old and I have a disabled child? Or how much money would it cost? How much money would I be satisfied with? And I said $120,000 a year would be great. But I then had to question myself, how in the heck I'm going to make that? But I've always believed that I know how to make money. It didn't matter how. I always knew how to position myself to make money. And anyhow, I walked away from this guy, and I went to my cell. And I got into my meditative mind. I cleared out all of my thoughts like I always do. And then I pray. I asked God, what was I going to do realistically when I got out of prison at 60 years old? God, clearly, you're going to advocate. You're going to educate people. You're going to influence people to get healthy. I didn't know about Facebook. I didn't know about apps and all that kind of stuff, right? So after this, all my dreams was about what was I going to do? How was I going to do this? So I started writing this stuff down on this paper at nighttime. I wake up dreaming. I'm writing this stuff down, how this would be beautiful. I have just this beautiful plan. I wrote all this stuff down on a bunch of yellow legal paper, and I gave it to this little white kid. He was pretty smart. He typed all that stuff for me, but he put it in an app form. I said, wow, this is heavy. He said, this is so doable, right? So anyhow, that's what I did when I came out. I got out in December 1st, 2015, and I've been on this project for a while. Now I've been seeking funds. You know, you got to make a living too. You know, I went straight on the Social Security disability and Social Security income, right? So the, I wasn't able to put this thing on the market, but I had enough money to get it made, the book made for an app. So I got a book ready for an app to be made, but then I pivoted. I went from an app to a board game. A board game is something tangible. Now this board game is going to be fun, and I'm there right now. I'm right in the process of getting the manufacturer to manufacture the game. I'm thinking about one prototype, and then he says, in order to get a reasonable price per game, I need to at least order 1,000 games, right? And so at $6.50 per game, right, which is reasonable, right, because if I'm asking $36-$37 per game, you know, that's going to pan out pretty good, right? But anyhow, that's what I'm doing right now. I'm in the midst of putting this board game out there, and then I'll put the app on the market. I'll open up. Look at here. I need help, and I know because this is huge, larger than me. I got everything written out. I got a plan to put this out there to where I can engage people in being healthy, because I'm going to tell you something. We're suffering. Like Star said, we're suffering. We have a lot of pain, and we have to address these things, but we have to change them, right? And here's another important thing. When I was in that prison and I took this program, it gave me so much insight on how to change behavior, right? You know that? And so here's what I've been doing. Exercising every single day. Praying every single day. Meditating every single day. And trying to eat healthy. I'm going to tell you something. I used to didn't drink water until I was in prison, and I was running every day in the sun, and my kidney got so bad because there wasn't enough water in it, and I had a kidney stone, and that quick kidney stone got stuck because of the water wasn't moving it out because I wasn't drinking enough water. Then I said, wow, I need to drink water. So that's how I come up with the fact that water is so important. When I got out, my sister had this alkaline machine. I'm going to tell you guys something about alkaline. You've got to put alkaline in your body because it's going to neutralize that acid. That acid that tears shit away. That acid that gives you all the different complications that you're going to have. You know that? You got to neutralize it. And water, alkaline foods, alkaline water, all that stuff will keep you out of the woods from diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiovascular problems, all that stuff. Your chances of living healthy throughout your life will be great. And I'm telling you, you have to do it, y'all. You know, we are suffering. Black folks especially are the bottom. We're at the bottom of every list when it comes to health. You know that? Every time I go out, I'm always looking to see if black people are running, riding bikes, exercising in the gyms or whatever. And you know what? Our numbers are really low. You know that? So are we to the point to where in our lives we believe that we don't have to exercise? Because we used to be exercising food. Let's think back when we were kids. We was always playing sports. We was always running. We was always racing. But we done got too cool.
Yep.
Too cool to get out and race, get out and run. You know that? I posted one time how many people get out and run, and people were saying, like, oh, no. Like, they were too, come on, what you mean? No, run is healthy.
Yep.
You know, they say if you run daily, you're going to add 10 years to your life. Extension.
Yep.
You know that? Not to mention the fact that you're sweating. You're taking care of those organs. I say this, if you want to eat unhealthy, exercise, sweat. Sweat those calories away until you start feeling how important it is to stop eating all of that garbage. You know that? Because it will come. It will come. You know that?
Yep.
And anyhow, you guys, I got some more time. But anyhow, that's what I do now.
I'm just going to say this little bit that I'm going to, I know Star is over there. She's just, she's antsy.
Okay.
I know it. But it was important for you to tell that whole story so that people could get a real good feel of what your background was, is, and how you chose to make that change in your life. And it wasn't as you were a young person. You know, you were mature. And I want to thank you for two things specifically. One is for taking care of your child. I've seen his picture on Facebook a number of times. And I really appreciate you stepping up, being the father to him. And if it wasn't always, at least you're doing it now. And the second thing is thanking you for listening to the words and the instructions that were put in your heart from God for you to change your life around. So, Star, I'm handing the mic over to you.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. I appreciate Warren for total honesty, because, and I appreciate hearing your story in its entirety. And there's part of me that thinks that it really wasn't in its entirety. I know that there's still more that you could share with us.
Mm-hmm.
But as I earlier, as far as what I thought encapsulized your life and where you are now, is that you have become a wounded healer. And I want you to tell me, from that position of being a wounded healer, how now, in this present day of 2020, would you be able to help little Warren back when his brother passed away, that maybe he might not have to go through what you went through all that time? What would you do? How would you instruct him? How would you be able to mentor him with the knowledge that you have now back in the day?
Well, I would do this. I know how important it is to deal with emotions. I know how it's okay to cry. You know that, and see, a lot of times we're told as we're coming up, men don't cry. And I grew up too fast. I never allowed myself, or my environment didn't allow me to grow up as a child. I had to grow up. I was put in a position to do something immediately, seemed like, right? But I didn't have that outlet. There was nobody around that recognized the pain, or even believe that there was pain. There was too much else going on. So that would be one of the first things I would do. I would make sure I keep the acknowledgement that you have to be going through something and that you're not sharing, that you're not getting rid of. You know that? I mean, because when heavy things like that happen, and you're extremely close to somebody, and you're a kid, and you don't know what to do with those emotions. Those things, that right there is enough to drown you for a while. And you know what?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like this here. I do NA and AA meetings, right? I used to do them a lot. I used to just love it. I just couldn't wait. You know, in prison, I used to start programs in prisons and shit, because I believe that those things are so important, because you got a chance to express, to get rid of all of that pain, those things that just barred you down, right? And I believe that it's extremely important that a person need to express, you know that? And that's one of the key things to overcoming most things that are causing pain, is you got to make it weak. You know that? If you just stays there, and it just marinates, you don't make it weak. It just stays there. You got to be able to diminish the feelings. And the only way you do that is by talking about it, expressing it, right? When I got into my feelings about my brother's death, let me tell you this, I missed this, is that every time I got in trouble, you know what I would dream? I would dream that my brother was locked away in prison. I never believed that he was dead. Every time, I'm serious, I had this dream four times. Every time I was in prison, I dreamed that I ended up going to a prison way up there in Washington State in Walla Walla, in this secret, in this one, this section of the prison that no one ever gets out. This dream I had four times. And I had this dream this last time when I was at Terminal Island, Federal Penitentiary. I had that dream. And then I start thinking, wow, all these things were signs. And then I start reading up on dreams, right? And I said, wow, I got to cut that dream loose, right? And all those things, and I'm serious. I said, I had to cut it loose. So that's what I would say. I would make sure that I can keep this in my son, little Warren's face, you know, that somebody would have to, I mean, it's all about somebody showing care. And that's why it's important to have a mentor. That's why it's important for people like us to be able to share with those that are going through that. You know that, because just think, all those females, there's so many females that have a story that they don't get a chance to express. And when they do express it, they're ignored when they're kids, and they end up using drugs, being out there on the streets all their life, and so they miss some of the most important parts of their lives. And they get so destroyed that it's hard for them to get back. But it's never too late to get back, you know, but it's hard. You know that? Just think about all of those, all of the people that were abused and used and sexually assaulted when they're coming up. That's hard.
Yeah.
That's all in a child.
Yeah, it has.
You know,
awesome.
Yeah. And so,
Warren,
these are the things that.
Now?
I'm 60. I'll be 65
now?
In November. I'll be 65 in November.
Okay.
I'm a Scorpio.
From all that
yeah.
you've come
yeah.
through, from all that you've gone through, I thought you
we
were going to say you're 75.
You what?
It seems like such a long. Yeah, it seems like such a long life. Is what
we got a caller,
you
guys.
Ain't said nothing.
Hold on 1 second. Hold on. So we got a caller 408-821. You want to give us your name and your comment, question, or concern, please?
Yeah, my name is Way Busy. They call me Way Busy.
Hey, Way.
That's what I. Yeah, so I was just listening to what you were talking about, and that's interesting how you put that. Could you say that last part one more time? The gentleman that was speaking, that last part you said?
And what part was that about expression, females, and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, just give me, just hit that one more time real quick, just real quick, just pop on there real quick. Let me see what it said.
Oh, you got
you know,
something you're reading from, or you want me to say it? That to take express all the people to go
yeah.
through a lot of, huh?
Yeah, go ahead. What you were talking about, just break it down real quick, real quick.
Okay, yeah, and all the people that are going through pain and suffering, all that pain and suffering that they experience in their life, they have to express it. They got to get rid of it because it will kill
uh-huh.
you. It will take you to places that you don't want to go, and it's not too
right.
late. You know,
hey, bro, you know what? When I listen to you, I think you're going to be able to reflect what I'm projecting to you because you're going to feel me, okay?
Okay.
All right? Okay. Now, what you're talking about is very personal, you know what I mean? Because you're talking from an inside yourself, you know what I mean? So for you, when you open yourself up to these people, when you're conveying something to these people, right, it's coming from your heart,
right.
okay?
Right.
Now, what you had to learn... Because, you know, when you're having a relationship with these people outside of yourself, you learn some things, you know what I mean? And you learn to take responsibility for your feelings, because some of these folks are going to be saying some stuff or doing some stuff that makes you feel a certain way, and your feelings you can't rely on all the time because your feelings don't always accurately reflect what's going on underneath your feelings where you are.
Uh-huh.
Okay? So you got to be on point, you know what I mean? Messing around talking about this and that when you got to get back to what's important. And what's important to you is when you're conveying something to people that you're helping those people to go from where they are to somewhere else, which is a higher position, so that they can deal with that difficulty that they were dealing with down here, but at a higher level, because love builds people up.
Right.
Is that
right.
what you're trying to talk? Is that what you're saying?
Of course, build people up.
Okay.
You got to take it. You got to help them. You got to help them get rid of all of that stuff that buried them, that caused them all of the suffering. Of course, you got to build them up, and you got to encourage them.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, you said you're 60, right? You're 60 right now?
No, 60. I'll be 65.
60. Okay, you're 65. Okay. So at 65, you can look back and see that all the stuff you did when you was younger has turned into wisdom for your age.
Right.
I'm like you, man. I don't want to cast my pearls to people that are just going to throw it into the swine, you know what I mean, and just trample it in that stuff, because what I'm talking about is precious. But what if somebody like that? What if somebody does like that when you're talking? Somebody does like that to what you're talking about, which comes from your heart because your lips are moving, and you ain't talking about anything outside of yourself. You're talking about something inside that you want to share with these folks, and that's the truth.
Yeah, and that's true. But here's the deal. A person, they take what they want to take from it, and I'm going to continuously press forward because everybody's not going to be like that. I was like that when I was a kid. You know, I didn't want to hear nothing. People were pouring themselves into me. I didn't want to hear nothing. But it took me going through what I went through in order to get there. So I'm able to appreciate it, and I'm able to recognize when a person don't gravitate to the word, you know, that
sweet,
that
man,
I understand
bro.
It. Yeah.
We've got one more caller. Let's pull this person in. And thank you so much. You're bringing up some very interesting points here. So we've got 940535. You want to give us your name and your contribution?
Hey, I'm Eve. Wow. I want to say to you all a lot of love. And now I got to get rid to your guests. Now let me slow down. Hey, powerful you. Whatever they say, however they hear it, however they receive it, you throwing it out there and I'm catching it and we catching it. You know, your responsibility is done. Right, and it's continually doing every day now. And so everything that you say that all of us here, you know what? They got experience theirs. You have experienced yours, and you done gave it to us and protected us. If they don't get it, I get it, and I'm telling them to get it too. Woo! Look at you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
A lot of respect, a lot of power, a lot of protection. You, me, and all of us. That's what I got for you. You know what? Diamonds is all of our even more best friend. Love you.
Let me just say one thing to what she was saying, because I got to say this real quick. Love means so many things. Not a seal of approval or diamond rings. It means to me a very great deal. Trust and honesty in how you feel. Yeah, those vows are sacred to be cherished and true, but they're more than just the words, I love you. You know what I mean? It's about how you feel, man.
Yes.
If you don't understand about feelings, man, how important they are, you ain't going to take responsibility. You know what I'm saying? Then that's going to be a detriment to you and other people that you come in contact with, because you're in conflict, and we try to help you to get straight.
What I love about what the brother said, you know what? This is what I got for you. You know what? We get it. Look, and some of us is not going to get it. That's the way it go in the land. But when you give it out, like you supposed to give it out, like the brother's doing it, like I hear you, you know what? It's our job to pray, like the brother told us, and ask the Creator who made the whole world and all of us, it's our turn. Can we get it, please? That's the job.
Come
love
on.
Y'all. Woo!
And I respect both of your comments, okay? And I understand you, brother man. I hear you. You know, that you have to feel. In order to make it, in order for others to feel, you have to feel. You know that? And here's my three C's. Be considerate, show concern, and care for others. All right? And those are my three C's. And that's what I live by every single day. You know, now. So anyhow, I appreciate your comment. And, I'm with you. I understand you.
Cool, man. Thank you, guys. I appreciate that. I really do.
Thank you.
I mean, because that's great.
Hey, you eat me up with goodness, and I so love you, and the caller, too. You know, let me tell you about what you've done. You know what? I'm speed, and I'm healthy. And you remind me of me, and I remind myself of you. And what you got is a package of power, and it's given to you. Whoa. And you know what? I respect you bigger than the world. It is given to us. You know what? Because we're part of it. And you're doing it. You're doing it. Only thing I got to say is hip, hip, cheerio, cheerio, hooray. Boom.
Okay, I got you. Thank you. That's some loud, good, positive energy.
Yeah.
Who is that? Who is that? That's Star and Sandy.
No, that's Eve. That was
that's
Eve.
Eve, honey. That's Eve, yeah. All the way.
Oh, Eve. Oh, that's Eve.
And you know what,
Eve,
brother?
Eve,
you know what,
yeah.
I love?
He's having
Sunday.
Fun. Yeah.
Well, hey, brother, one day you might set up a race, and this time you're going to have to catch me.
Okay.
You know,
powerful discussion.
I'm going to jump in here real quick because I got an epiphany at the very end when you said that you kept having this reoccurring dream that your brother was not dead, he was locked away in prison. I think that your mind put you there and you kept doing things to go to prison to join your brother.
Ah.
What do you think about
that? Well, the thing about it is that that's a possibility. You know, that here's what I gathered from it, is that I never dealt with it. You know, I never accepted the fact that he was dead. You know that?
Right.
Until I actually dealt with it, you know, when I was going back to court, right, that's when I had to let go of it. That's when it was clear to me that, hey, look at here. That pain got to go because that pain was too powerful. It was controlling your life.
Yeah.
You know, I couldn't move forward. Because I had good jobs. I have great people around me. There's a whole lot of things that I had in my life that I could have took advantage of and become a different person. But wouldn't allow me. You know, that's all. You know, but I get it now.
Yeah.
It's gone.
Mm.
I've accepted it. You know, and so now here I'm moving forward. And God gave me a vision. The vision is huge. The vision is bigger than me. And I just, hey, I'm on Facebook every day, and I've been in 2 car accidents, y'all. I never said this. And those were death. One of them, it caused me pain in my back and my shoulder. The other one had me in the hospital for 2 months. And they had to induce me in a coma for 2 weeks. And the only way that I healed while I was in the hospital is that they had to keep me out. They kept me so drugged up I couldn't move because I had 19 broke ribs. I had a cracked pelvis. My rotator cuff was torn out, and my bladder was shattered, and I damaged part of my lung. And my face was swollen. I had glass all in my eye. And you know what? If you look at me now, you could never tell I was in an accident. God saved me. And that's when I realized, look at here, I have several lives, and I'm still here, right? So I'm supposed to continue on this path. I know my purpose. My purpose is doing exactly what I'm doing right now.
So are you a cat? Are you a feline?
Yes, I'm not quite a cat. I ain't had 9 lives, but I'm going to tell you something. I'm pretty close. God got a purpose for me.
That's right.
You're blessed.
Well, it certainly has been a remarkable story, and I'm thinking, what would be the name of the movie of your life, and who would play you? What actor would be take the leading role, if you could think about
me.
That real quickly?
Me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Would you say you? You can handle that?
Heck yeah.
You would have to be a real handsome, freckle-faced guy.
Well, I'm not freckle-faced. I'm not freckle-faced, but... I got no freckles, but I got credentials. I got credentials.
Okay.
And my,
okay.
And
got
my
credentials
is what I bring
right.
to the table.
Put some brown spots on his face if we have to.
Yeah. And look at those freckles. I'm going to tell you something. Those freckles got me from places. I'm serious. Those freckles, people love those freckles, right? And it got me places. You know, and being, I'm going to tell you something. I used to take advantage of the fact that I was light-skinned and not bad-looking, and I had this physique. And I just used to get approached all the time, right? But they just didn't know how bad I was doing inside. But I had, you know, people used to stop me, want to take pictures to me. People would want to, where are you going to go tonight? Clubs, can I dance so good? All these things. I'm serious. I got a story. You know that? And sure, it wasn't going to be told in an hour and a half. You know that? I thought that was a long time. I could have went on and on and on. You know that?
We told you. And we are out of time.
Out of time.
Did you want to read that last message that you had, or are you good?
You know what? I'm good because it's long.
Okay.
I'm good.
Okay. And so, Warren, I really feel you because, I mean, for real, feel you as a blood relative of mine, even though we've never met. And who knows what the possibility, you know, of that actually being true. You have truly, truly touched my heart today. There were points and times where, you know, just the things that you were saying just tugged at my heart because we don't talk about these things a lot of times, you know, not in an honest way. We don't want people to know what our history is and, you know, what we've really been through in life. And so we either don't ever bring the subject up or, you know, we pretty it up when we get into it. So thank you for being so transparent. Thank you for being so real. And thank you again for what you do on a daily basis. I know that if I need picking up, all I need to do is look for Warren Armstead on Facebook, and he's going to have a positive message every day, every day. So thank you, cuz.
And the words are different. And the words are different, like you said.
Yes.
Thank you, Cindy. You've been a blessing, and I believe all us Armsteads are related. That's just what I believe. You know that?
Me too.
Star, appreciate you as well. It's been great being
all
on
right.
the show. If you need somebody to take up some more time later on, just call me.
We'll do that. And thanks to the callers calling in with your contributions. We truly enjoyed you and appreciated you. Whew, God, it's been an awesome show. Awesome.
Thank you, Warren.
Everybody stay safe.
Love you all.
Love you. Love covers everything.
That's right. Love, peace, and happiness.
Goodbye, everybody. See you next week.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.